ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधिताम् भगवता नारायणेन स्वयम् व्यासेन कृतिताम् पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीम् भगवतीम् अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्धतामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी.
Now we did verse 8 last time, but I really didn't do the second line, so I just have a few more things to wrap up with verse 8. Okay. So chapter 6, verse 8.
Jnanavik jnanatrittatma, Jnanavik jnanatrittatma, Kutasto vijitendriyaha, Kutasto vijitendriyaha, Yukta ityuchate yogi, Yukta ityuchate yogi, Samaloshtashma kanchanaha, Samaloshtashmakanchanaha. Jnana vijnana tripta atma kutastaha vijita indriyaha yuktaha iti uchate yogi sama loshta ashma kanchanaha.
So jnana, this is the first line we spent a lot of time on, so I'm just going to translate it basically. Jnana vijnana tripta atma, the one whose mind is satisfied, is whole, is complete, all is well with me. I mean, the mind has that alam buddhi, that it's enough, all is fine. The one whose mind is satisfied or full, because of their jnanam and vijnanam. Jnanam is the shastric understanding, the understanding of what the shastra actually says. And the vijnana is the realization of that, the aparoksha jnana, the embodied knowledge of that, the recognition of the reality of that, of what the shastra says. Okay? So jnana, vijnana, triptatma. And that person who has that knowledge, that aparoksha jnanam, as well as shastra jnanam, who is kutastaha, means the atma itself is kutastha. Means like an anvil. It's steady. It's changeless. So my being is changeless. It is always the same. Nothing touches it or harms it in any way. So for that person who is the kutastha atma, whose mind is full because of the jnanam and vijnanam, who is vijitendriya, one whose sense organs are, and mind and sense organs are under their control, held in their hands, that person is a yuktaha, means one who is, how would Swamiji say, he has a nice way of saying that. That yogi is called a yuktaha, means, this is what he says, one who is together. That person is together, means that he or she really has control of the mind, to the sense organs, to the point of another way, a nice way of saying it. So that for that person, the mind and the sense organs are relaxed. The mind, the sense organs, and the body are relaxed because the buddhi is holding them in its hands. The mind and the sense organs don't have the capacity to just run you ragged. It can't run off and steal the buddhi. Right? And so that's the vijitendriya. That person is said to be composed or held together. And that yogi is said to be yukta. Such a person is composed. And that yogi is sama loshta ashma kanchanaha. For that person, a piece of dirt clod, a stone, or gold are samaha, are equal. They're equal. It's not that gold is taken to be a dirt clod and a dirt clod is taken to be a stone. It's they're equal in terms of their ability to give security or ananda or happiness. In other words, all of them enjoy the same mityatva You know, there's no super. There's not any more superimposition on a gold coin than there is on a dirt clod, right? As terms of, oh, this will make me secure, or this will. This is meaningless to me, but this will make me secure. This will be make me happy. Right? In fact, Swamiji tells a story in his Bhasha here, which he often has told many times in class. In the autobiography or the biography of Ramakrishna, it's a big book. Right? One of his disciples relates a story about Ramakrishna or somebody within that order that relates a story. And the story is that the disciple, in order to test Ramakrishna, and I think it was Ramakrishna, but it doesn't matter, this Mahatma, in order to test the Mahatma, the Guru, they put a gold coin under the mattress.
No,
under the mattress. Well, for you it can be pillow. Under the pillow or under the mattress. But I'm going to say mattress. That's why I heard it. They put a gold coin under the mattress. Okay, hit it. Just to see what would happen to the guru. And so they say when the teacher woke up in the morning, you know, after having slept all night with this gold coin under the mattress, the teacher was just saying, oh, I just was so restless. I couldn't sleep at all last night. And the disciple interpreted this as, well, that's because you're a great Mahatma and gold is really upsetting to you. And so when Swamiji, when he was talking about this story, he says, you know, you can't blame the Mahatma for a story like this. You have to give the Mahatma, you have to give the teacher the benefit of the doubt. You know, and that this is the student's understanding of Vairagya as, you know, instead of having it be equal, these things be equal. In fact, if I have gold in my presence because it's so valued by people, to me it would be something that I'm actually very afraid of and need to keep far away from me, you know. Or just its very sight is upsetting or irritating to me. Rather than this samalojta, you know, that all of things are equal. And so Swamiji kind of jokes saying, there's no way that we can attribute this to the teacher because it would be as though saying that the teacher is an ajnani. The teacher would have to be an ajnani in a sense to feel that way. But it's the teacher's misunderstanding.
Maybe he was just the princess on the tea and was...
That's funny, maybe. Yeah, but that's how the disciple interpreted that. And it's a good story because it's a story of the opposite, that is the actual opposite of how it would is and how it would be. And that is, it has to do with what is your security? What do you count on for security or ananda? And because for an ajnani, you know, for somebody who doesn't have nishta, our security, our ananda, is going to be projected onto the world, onto certain things in the world, onto those things that we believe will give us security. And then on things that we don't believe will give us security or give us ananda, there is no projection. And so to compare gold to stone or a dirt clod is what is bringing that out. I can think, you know, my wealth will give me ananda, my wealth will give me a tremendous sense of security. But in fact, wealth doesn't tend to provide a sense of security. It tends to provide a sense of worry about losing your security that it's providing, right? And that tends to be the nature of the creation. Even ananda, something that is giving you ananda, actually it's giving you some ananda, but it's also giving you a worry about the loss of the ananda. And wealth is very much like that, you know. And there's never enough. With wealth, there's never enough because you could always run out or something could always happen to take some of that wealth away. And so, in fact, the sannyasi is somebody who gives up, and we'll see in the next verses, they give up all of their wealth, you know. Just as a statement, they give up their wealth. Because the wealth, in fact, has nothing to do with my sense of well-being and my sense of security. The security, the sense of security, is the nature of the Atma. The Atma is secure, the Satchit is secure, my being is secure because it's changeless. Nothing can take it away from me. And Ishwara is secure in the sense that, in this sense, that the relationship that you have with Ishwara as a jiva is Ishwara, right? The relationship, the jivatvam, the jiva, and the relationship with Ishwara in terms of part to a whole, right? That itself is Ishwara. And so for the jnani, there's a surrender of the jiva to Ishwara. The jiva is also Ishwara, right? The part is also part. The part is part of the whole. The part is not separate of the whole. So the part is also Ishwara. The relationship is Ishwara. The karma is Ishwara, you know? The whole life, the whole unfoldment of the life is Ishwara. So since the whole is Ishwara and the part is part of Ishwara, there's a surrender of the part to the whole. And that is a security. Because I get what is mine and I don't get what is not mine. From the standpoint of Ishwara. In other words, this creation unfolds as it, as Ishwara unfolds as Ishwara unfolds. And I am part of that unfoldment. I'm not separate from the from Ishwara's unfoldment. You know what I mean by unfoldment? The passage of time. The change, the life of Ishwara, the life of the whole. I as a jiva am not separate from the life of the whole. I'm part of the life of the whole. Or I'm part, another way of saying it, I'm part of the story of the whole. I am part of Ishwara's story. It's impossible for me to be left out of Ishwara's story because there's nothing outside of Ishwara. And so then for jnani, the life becomes one of wonder. And the wonder or the awe or the appreciation or the devotion to or the surrender to, well, there's all kinds of words you can use and all of them are true. The surrender to that life of which you are a part. Right? Another way of saying it is a surrender to the prarabdha. Of being present to the prarabdha, the karmas that made you take this birth, all Ishwara. So being present to the life that is yours. And the life that is yours is Ishwara, right? The life that is yours is Ishwara's. And so that's the security. So in terms of jnanam, you will get what is yours and you won't get what is not yours, right? That's a kind of a nice way of understanding the prarabdha. And it's very, I have found that particular understanding very relaxing, mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. It's just, if it's meant to be there for you, it will be. And nobody can do anything about that. And if it's not meant to be there for you, it definitely won't be. And nobody can do anything about that either. And so that gives you a sense of peace. Especially when you're worried about not getting something that you think you need or want for your well-being. You can say, well, if it's meant to be, if it's mine, it's mine. If it's not, it's not. And then just watch how Bhagavan unfolds it. And Bhagavan, another interesting thing is, Bhagavan, Bhagavan unfolds the as the creation, I forgot what I was going to say, just a minute. Oh, I know. The intelligence and the experience of the jiva is so limited. The mind, you know, the intelligence, the capacity, the knowledge of the jiva is so limited compared to the infinite knowledge of Ishwara, the infinite plan of Ishwara. And so you can only figure it out so much and see into the future so much, you know. Not very far. Really, because say if you look back just a couple of years or look back 5 years, you'd probably be shocked at what's happened to you over this time. You didn't know what the unfoldment of your life would be. At least it's usually that way for me. It's full of surprises. So it's like not like you're omniscient into the future. And sometimes when you're going around a corner, you have no idea. You can't see around the corner. You know, you're going up this way. You can see this far ahead, but you can't see this way and you can't see that way. You don't have a clue. But you see the corner approaching, right? But so it's seeing the corner approaching, it's like you're seeing the abyss. You're approaching the abyss because you can't see around the corner, right? And so, you know, that's when it's kind of helpful to have developed a relationship or a kind of a jnana, a knowledge-based relationship with Ishvara. Because then you can be kind of excited to see what is around this corner that I have no clue, because I'm approaching it really quickly. I'm almost at the corner. I have no clue what's on either side. You know? But you know what? When you get to the corner, something will be there. Right? Something that has to do very much with the unfoldment of your life will be there. And then that's the next thing for you to do. You know? It's nice, always works in hindsight. But it's very wonderful when you have enough experience and enough knowledge to look forward to it in the foresight. You know? So that's where the security is in Ishvara. And the real security is not even in Ishvara. You know, the real security is in the nature of yourself, which is never modifying or changing at any time. And then that with Ishvara, this Ishvara is an expression of yourself, of the Atma. And this body, mind, sense organs is part and parcel of that expression. It's another nice way of looking at it. That this body, mind, sense organs, and your prarabdha, right, because it is part of Ishvara, right, it is therefore a manifestation of yourself. Because Ishvara is a manifestation. The Maya Upadhi is a manifestation of yourself. It's not of somebody else. It's of your being. And so this Upadhi also, and this one, and this one, and this one, is a manifestation, and this life is a manifestation of your being, not separate from your being. Because Ishvara is the Atma, right? Ishvara doesn't have any other self other than the Atma. Right? So Ishvara is the Atma. The Atma is free of Ishvara. Right? Because the Ishvara comes and goes as the Maya Upadhi. You can say the Ishvara himself has for its truth only Brahman, only the Atma. The Atma is free even of Ishvara. Even Ishvara, now Swamiji will say like this, even Ishvara can't harm the Atma. Even Ishvara cannot touch you, cannot take you away from yourself, cannot rob you of your ananda, cannot rob you of your being. Because for Ishvara himself, the self of Ishvara is that Atma. Right? And the mitya can't touch the satyam. Mm. And so even Ishvara can't harm you. You know? And can't harm you or do anything to you. At the same time, Ishvara, you as a jiva have a relationship with Ishvara. And then you have to realize that you, the jiva, are part and parcel of Ishvara. And Ishvara is an expression of yourself. Right? So the jiva is Ishvara. Mm. Ishvara is Ishvara. Mm. And the self of Ishvara is my being. So that's where the security lies. Not in the relationship between one object and another. No relationship between subject and object. Subject means the jiva. And the object is anything that I want. Anything is secure. Everything in that relationship is subject to loss. This upadhi is subject to loss. The object of desire is subject to loss. You know? The desire itself is subject to change, so there is no security in it. And so, what if I realize that, then I'm not looking for my security or ananda in any of the things that are existing in the creation, from a dirt cloud to a gold coin. That's not where my heart isn't asking the creation to fulfill me in that way. So that's what he says, this person is really this yogi who's a jnani. That person is the same toward all of these things, and that person is said to be Yuktaha, a yogi. Okay, so let's go on to that next verse. So he's going on talking more now about the jnani, the one who has jnana nishtha. Sukhrimitrayudasina. Sukhamitrayudasina Madhyastha Dvaishya Bandhushu Madhyastha Dvaishya Bandhushu Sadhushvapicha Papeshu Samabuddhir Vishishyate
samabuddhir visheshyate. Suhrit, mitra, ari, udasina, madhyasta, dvesha, bandhushu. Sadhushu api japapeshu, samabuddhihi visheshyate. So he goes on. Now, Sufit. This first line is—it's a compound. The whole thing is one word. It's one compound. The Sufit. A Sufit is a benefactor. It's somebody who is a friend to you, who is a benefactor to you, who helps you. Without themselves, this is the key to it. Without themselves expecting anything in return. That's a Sufit. The one who, it's kind of that agape, the one who loves without needing or expecting you to love in return, the one who gives and helps without expecting anything in return. It's like, you know, I'll rub your back if you'll rub mine. It's not that. It's that one who gives and helps without a need or expectation of you to give or help in return. That's a Sufit. A mitra is a friend. A mitra, there's just something that the two of you have a bond and you have something in common and you enjoy each other's friendship, you enjoy each other's company. But, you know, you help me and I help you. There's a relational bond there. It's not just one way. But the Sufit doesn't require that even emotionally. The mitra requires it. The friend requires that. Even emotionally, you know, I'm kind to you, you be kind to me. I love you, you love me. I help you, you help me. That's understood in a friendship. But for a Sufit, it's I am happy to help you. Whether you help me or not, I don't have that expectation. So that's the Sufit, the Mitra. Then the Udasina. The Udasina is the neutral person, the spectator, the one who's really not involved. You know, like, for instance, if there's a bunch of people at a bus stop and one person is noticing the other people get on the bus stop and you get on the bus, you know, you're there or you're all getting on the bus, you're all participating, but there is no real connection. There's no involvement whatsoever. There's neutrality. In fact, if the person you're standing at the bus stop or the person, and the person starts to get on the bus and then they change their mind and get off the bus. And, you know, and the Udasina, the person standing there watching and saying, oh, this person is getting off the bus. Now this person is getting on the bus. To this person, it doesn't matter at all if they get on the bus or they don't get on the bus. It doesn't make any difference at all. That's an Udasina. It's completely neutral. They're uninvolved. They don't really care one way or the other. Neutral. You know, when I tell the story around Ananda of the woman who's at a party and her ex, you know, her ex comes to this party, and there's the woman who's the ex-wife of this man who's now entered the party, and there's this man's fiance who's at the party, and then there's everybody else. For this man, the ex-wife is feeling rather disturbed that he's come to the party because she wasn't expecting it and she feels awkward and embarrassed. The fiancé, on the other hand, is waving and so happy, right? You know? And the other people could care less, no vritti, no thought at all about the entry of this person. That's Udasina. Absolutely, they see him absolutely neutral, right? So that's Udasina. Where the next one is Madhyastaha. The Madhyastaha is the one who's a mediator. Like if there's a... Swamiji uses an example of Switzerland. Being a nation, Switzerland is a country that always will act, can always do mediation between other countries because they pose themselves as neutral. In other words, they're not going to take sides, but they help to help the others resolve their dispute. So it's an arbitrator, you know, or a mediator is a madhyasta. And that person is different than an udasina because they do care and they are connected to both sides. It's just that they're not taking one side or the other. they're helping the two sides come to some sort of an agreement, right? So they're involved, but they're not taking sides. They're arbitrating, helping the two people come to an agreement. That's a madhyastha, okay? Remember, this was written a long time ago. So interesting, you know, that all of these, of course, have their life. Oh, I left one out. Suhrit is the benefactor. Mitra, the friend. Adi is the enemy. That comes before Udasina. So the Adi is the enemy. The enemy is the one who actually wishes you harm, wants to hurt you, you know, and is for whatever reasons, you know, is inimical to you and wants to do you harm. That's an enemy. And Swamiji is interesting in his commentary on this. There's a lot of things that can make a person an enemy to you that has nothing to do with you. For instance, jealousy can make a person an enemy. You happen to be very good at something, that person, you know, resents that you're good at something. Maybe you're very attractive, beautiful. Men and women tend to have this problem, very physically attractive, especially for women. Then other women can be very, very negative, very jealous, very hostile, because there's competition. And so what makes a person an enemy to you need not have to do with you. Or it could. It could be that you've done something in order to engender that animosity or that hatred or that wishing to do you harm. But need not be. What makes the person an enemy is that they wish to do you harm. And so they're actually a danger to you in some way. A physical danger, an emotional danger, you know, in terms of your security, a danger because they're out to harm. That's an enemy. Okay? Many different things can evoke that. And some that you can be completely innocent of. Then the Udasina is the neutral person, Madhyastha, the arbitrator. Dvesha is interesting. It's a person who deserves to be disliked. Potential participle. Right? Because they've done something. Just to you, you know. They've done something to you that is cruel or hurtful or adharmic or caused or done something that warrants your dislike or warrants your hatred. First, I'm sorry. Right? They've actually done something that will evoke your dislike or your hatred. And so that's a dvesha. Somebody who deserves to be hatred in the context of your life, not generally. The person who deserves to be hated by you might be very loved, you know, deserve to be loved by another person. So it means that something has actually taken place that is a violation. And so that evokes a lot of hatred. And then there's the bandhu. The bandhu is a relation, a very close friend in India, you know, like an auntie, all the friends and their aunties and uncles. But also there's just the bandhu or the relations, the family members. And now with the family members, there's always some sort of an emotional commitment, expectations. And so bandhus can also cause you a lot of emotional joy and pain because they have expectations of you and needs. And you have of them also. And so with bandhus, with relations, there's a closer relationship where there's a lot of expectations. So family members can cause you a lot of pain. You've caused them a lot of pain. And a lot of joy also. And they can give you security. They can give you help. They can stand by you. But there's an emotional bond, emotional connection there. That's the bandhu. Relatives, family. Okay. You have a different level of relationship with them than you do with just friends, you know. And so here, these are the first group. And then he goes on, he says, so there's all of these people toward, he's in the locative plural, so this is one compound, so toward all of these people. And then he says, sadhushu chapapeshu, and also toward, in general, the good people. The good people, those as Arjuna, as Shankara will say, the people who follow Dharma, they're living a Vedic life, you know, They're trustworthy people. They're good people, good, clean people. They're religious people in terms of the Vedic culture. So they're following the Shastra. So toward those people, and Papeshu, and toward those who don't. The Papis are the ones who are not following Dharma or are doing things, in fact, not just not following Dharma, they're actually a Dharma. They're a Dharmic. They're accruing Papa to themselves. So they're like the sinners, you know, or the persons who, you know, are getting themselves in trouble, continually getting themselves in trouble and not dependent, not committed to Dharma at all. Those are the Papis. And so toward all of these people, he says, samabuddhihi visheshyate, the one whose buddhi is their samatva, that person is visheshyate, that person is the most exalted. Another reading of this is vimuchyate, that person is liberated. Visheshyate means for that person there's, and they say that person is exalted, who is the most exalted in the world of jnanis? Who is the most exalted, or who is the liberated, one who's really liberated, is the one who isn't, whose nishta, whose shanti, isn't disturbed by all of these different types of people. It's really interesting because what Krishna is saying here, there are so many different types of people and different types of relationships in your life, right? The bandhus are all the types of emotional relationships, familial relationships with so many expectations. You know, friendships also, there can be betrayal, there can be need, all kinds of give and take is necessary. You know, but at least they're a friend. Then there's the enemies. What to do with the enemies? You know, the ones who are out to get you. What to do with the dvaishas, those people that have really, really hurt you? They deserve to be hated, in fact. They've done so much harm to you or to your family or to your loved ones or to your life or to your career. They've done real papa to you. So they deserve to be hated. So all of these different types of people, and then all just the neutral people, the arbitrators, all of these, the good people, the neutral people, the bad people, the people that hurt you, the people that are out to get you, the people that have all kinds of expectations on you. You know, and then the dharmic people and the adharmic people, to have a mind that is free. Samatvam. Samatvam means it's the same. It's not thrown off. It's not thrown off in the presence of these people. In the midst, in the locative means, in the presence of, in the midst of all of these people, my mind remains in with itself. I remain relaxed in those situations. It's a beautiful thing to think about. You know, that I can hold all of these different types of people objectively and be helpful to all of them, to have the same feelings toward all of them, because my feelings aren't dependent on them. My feelings are really brought about by my mind's relationship with the self. So my feelings for them by... Now that's... But let me say something a little bit differently. Feelings in the sense of non-rejecting, you know, are the same for all. There's no rejection, there's no pushing away, there's no hatred. There's, and I would say more like this, there's an objectivity, an interest, you know, an objectivity, an interest, wanting to help, if that's being called upon, or just allowing to be. The whole thing is that the shanti of your mind isn't disturbed. That there's that type of an objectivity. So that person who has that type of a samatva buddhi is visheshyate. That person, we're talking about jnanis now that have jnana nishtha. That person is a liberated person. That person is most exalted. You know, because the pratibandhikas are gone. Right? There's no pratibandhikas inside. There's nothing that's if there's no pratibandhikas, there's no real projection onto the creation to make a person be able to draw out that type of response from me. And so that jnana, the mind is mature, there's jnana nishtha there. So in both of these verses, in 8 and 9, they're talking about a person, not just who's a karma yogi or a sannyasi, but now they're talking about a jnani, a person who has jnana nishtha, a brahmanishtha, they're talking about. Now the question is, How to become a Brahmanishta. How to bring the mind into that level of maturity to work out all of the kinks in the mind. And so he's talking now, because this whole verse, this whole chapter for the most part is on jhanam, on meditation, and on gaining this jnana-nishtha. And so let's go on here, and he's going to start introducing meditation.
Is it possible for that person you just described to still be in the vyavahara world?
Absolutely. They are in the vyavahara because it's their relationship to all of these type of people.
But then that could be a sannyasi too.
It could be a sannyasi too.
But it's not necessarily only sannyasi.
Well, let me put it this way. The sannyasi, when we use the word sannyasi, you can be talking about lifestyle. It means they've just taken the orange.
Okay.
Right? So then there's the karma yogi or the sannyasi. Right? The karma yogi is staying in the world and then gaining knowledge and then practicing living the life of karma yoga in the world. The sannyasi has taken the orange. They're also living a life of karma yoga. Right? Even though taking the karma yoga in terms of attitude, but they're now there living that lifestyle. But then for either one in the end has to become a jnani. And the jnani is the one who has sattva karma sannyasa. It means they are a sannyasi in terms of guna. Right? A sannyasi who's just taken the orange can be a vividisha sannyasa.
Oh, okay.
They're taking the orange in order to gain knowledge, in order to have a lifestyle where they're just doing shravana, manana, nididhyasana. That is what they do.
Right.
The karma yogi has all kinds of responsibilities in the world, but they do it with that karma yoga buddhi, that ishvara arpana buddhi.
But then it's easier for a sannyasi to be, away without all those feelings for the... Or to be equal to Mitra and
everything. No, we would have to say like this. The sannyasi can also have all kinds of... The sannyasi who's wearing orange can have all of these kind of... all different kinds of feelings toward all of these. So they're still practicing karma yoga. But for a sannyasi who has brahmanishta, so then it's sarva karma sannyasa, right? Then that sannyasi is a jnani, has brahmanishta. And that's why Vishishyate means most exalted. That person is exalted among jnanis. There can be Paribandhika jnana, you have knowledge, but your mind is still maturing, you're still practicing attitudes and all of that. But there comes a time when your mind, and you notice this in your own maturing process, that your mind becomes less and less judgmental, right? Less and less needy of the world to make me feel complete or whole. And you can just notice that maturing process as your mind is depending more and more just on the Atma for its wholeness. Or let me put it another way. As the mind has worked out, has gained this knowledge and worked out a lot of the kashaya, a lot of the impurities in the mind, the complexes and whatnot, and habits in the mind, the mind is enjoying naturally more and more shanti. Right? It has knowledge. And the Paribandhikas, the obstructions, are being worked out. As it enjoys shanti, it asks less and less and less of the world. The more shanti you enjoy, the less you ask of the world. Because you already have what the world was meant to give you before. If you already have what you had depended on the world to give you previously, you're not going to be asking for it because it's already your nature. And so as your mind settles down in the light of this knowledge, the shanti increase of the mind increases. And as the shanti of the mind increases, your relationship to the world becomes more and more objective. Because you're not dependent on it to give you the ananda. And so then you can take things as they are. And then it's easy to see everything as Ishvara. Because you're not asking it to make you happy, right? And so now if you see everything as Ishvara, then the suhrit is Ishvara, right? The benefactor is Ishvara, the friend is Ishvara, the enemy is Ishvara. Because even the enemy is not dependent on the enemy or the friend to give me ananda. So there's an objectivity, right? I may, It's not that I don't realize what that person is doing. It's not that you become blind to what is, but your expectations are not the same because you're not asking for the ananda. And so that's why you can have that sama buddhi, because you're not asking them to give you something. You're not needing them to give you something. So that's the idea. Okay, so let's do this next one. Yogi yunji tasatatam. Yogi yunji tasatatam. Atmanam rahasi stitaha. Atmanam rahasi stitaha. Ekaki yata chittatma. Ekaki yata chittatma. Nirashir aparigraha. Nirashir aparigraha. Yogi yunjita. Yogi yunjita. Satatam atmanam rahasi stitaha. Ekaki yata chitta atma. Nirashihi aparigraha. Here, yogi. The yogi is the one who is the meditator, the one who meditates. Oh, it's not yunjita taha, it's yunjita, sorry. Let the yogi, the meditator, yunjita means to practice meditation, but it means to unite the mind with the object of meditation, literally. So, but we can just say in English, let the yogi should meditate, it's potential. The yogi should meditate, or let the yogi, the one who meditates, satatam, always yunjita, unite the atmanam, you know, bring the atman, bring the mind into, let the atma, let's see in English how you do this. They're making the mind meditate. The atman here is the mind. Okay, so let the yogi bring the mind into meditation. Unite the mind with the object of meditation, right? Which would be the Atma. So, the yogi should satatam always meditate, should always be meditating. Swamiji in his commentary says, and when you say, you have to be careful, when you say, because people are very literal, the yogi should always meditate. Now, this does not mean that you have to meditate, you know, for 24 hours a day or 12 hours a day. It's just that the meditation should be, you know, a focus of your life. So that should be something that you spend time doing, that you're every day, daily, you're meditating. You spend time every day meditating, contemplating. So let the yogi here is the sannyasi and the sannyasi who's, and it doesn't have to just be a sannyasi, but it's the one who is devoted, who's devoting their life to this jnana nishtha. Okay, so the sannyasi or the karma yogi, if they can find the time for it, okay, let them spend a significant amount of time during their day in meditation. That's what it's saying. Rahasi stitta, staying in a quiet place. Rahasi like means like in a cave, but it really means, you know, in a place that's away from people. A quiet place. You'd be away from people. Swamiji's often said, you know, like say you're living in the middle of the city and you're living with your family. So where's that quiet place going to be? Well, you can have a clean, quiet corner somewhere and get up before everybody gets up. Yeah. So if you can't find a place in your home because there's people walking around all of the time, then get up early in the morning when people are asleep, and at that time, you know, or go outside and find a beautiful place for yourself. Like go in a forest or find a place, a meditative spot for yourself, where ekaki, you can be alone. You can be by yourself at that time. You can be in a quiet place alone at that time. And then finding in that special place, a space, when we say special place, it should be a space that is clean, and Swamiji often say it's clean, and it's nice if it can be inspiring, you know, if it can be a beautiful space, even if it's in a corner of your house, if it can be a clean and beautiful space, or it can be a space up in the mountains or in nature, you know, but a space that evokes that sanctity. So create, try to create a clean and beautiful space, maybe with an altar or some sort of beautiful space. And in that space, may you spend time doing this meditation. So ekaki means alone, keeping to yourself. And so meditation is not something that you necessarily do with a friend. You know? Well, you can, but then when you're doing it, you're both alone with yourself. You know, it's not you're not exactly meditating together. You may be both meditating in the same room. Like group meditation is sometimes a very nice thing. But when you're doing the meditation, you're doing it alone. Okay? So, ekaki, then yetachitta-ma, then be one whose mind and whose mind and body, atma here means body, chitta means the mind, the memories, and the mind and the body, chitta-atma, are yetaha, are in one's hand, are in one's control. Chitta means mind, it also means memories, you know. And so the memories. Let's see where this other thing is. It means mind and also the memories. The memories also are all of those traumas of the past and all of the things that come up and the memories about what has happened to you and how things should have been and what went wrong and all of those past hurts and guilts, shames, feelings of things that didn't go well in the past, all of those type of thoughts, you know, the one who has able to hold those in your hand, you know, to bring those things under control. So it's not just the thoughts, but it's the memories. So the ones who is able to bring those into a state of resolve. So yetta chitta atma, and who is, because they're talking really about the sannyasi here, and the one who is gaining, has done a lot of karma yoga, is gaining the antakarana shuddhi, enough antakarana shuddhi to be able to meditate, to be able to absorb the mind or have the capacity to do that. So to put the word, one who has the capacity to put the worries aside or to deal with the worries and complexes in such a way that they can, at least for the moment, come into a state of quiescence and relaxation. So that's the yetta chitta atma. Then nirashihi, the one who is, again, this is all part of the same thing, nirashihi literally means the one who is without hope. But what they mean here is the one who doesn't have expectations, is free from expectations. Like, in order for me to be happy, things have to go this way. Mm. Or what if this happens? What if this doesn't happen? So the one who is able to appreciate their memories and not be hurt by their memories, and to be able to look forward without expectation, in the sense that my ananda is dependent on things going in this way. So it's the yetta chitta atma is freedom, the freedom from what has happened up to this time, to be able to hold my past without guilt or shame or worry or hurt or resentment, but be able to hold my past as my life with a certain freedom. And nirashihi is the ability to be able to hold my future, what I see coming in, without expectation, without needing it to be a certain way. That gives a tremendous relaxation to the mind. That's nirashihi. And aparigraha means to be free of possessions. So if a person takes sannyasa, they give up all of their possessions, right? But then this verse is primarily meant for a sannyasi. So why should they have to say a parigraha here? Well, it's because hoarding is so natural. You know this feng shui? They say you have to keep giving, giving, giving. You have to get used to giving up, giving up, giving up. Giving away things, giving away things, giving away things, because things continue to accumulate. You give away and you give away and you give away, but more continues to come. Right? Like the more you give, the more it comes, and it fills up your house and fills up your house. Even if you have a little couture, it fills up the couture. I mean, Swamiji has things coming all the time, all kinds of things, all kinds of books, all kinds of little knickknacks, all kinds of little games, little treats, all kinds of little things are coming and coming and coming. You know? So they don't, things don't stop coming. So you have to have that spirit of giving, 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 giving. Clearing out, clearing out, clearing out. Because otherwise you'll become a collector. And oh, this thing is so nice, I need to have this. So I'll put this over here. And then this thing's, well, this is useful too, so I put this over here. And so there has to be kind of a spirit of non-attachment to those things. Otherwise it becomes a... Have you ever seen homeless people with shopping carts? Yeah, that's what can happen to a sannyasi.
That's not good.
They need a shopping cart. They're in trouble.
There's a lot of stories around that type of thing. You know, it's hoarding.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so it's really, I mean, all of us probably know this, but it's really very freeing to go through your house periodically and get rid of stuff, get rid of, get rid of, get rid of, get rid of. Feng shui your house is a wonderful, wonderful feeling. And then you can see how hard it is to get rid of some things. Mm. And even write books on it. How to let these things go, even though you haven't used them for years. You know, they're still stored away in your closet. They're stored away there because someday you might need them. You know? And so how to actually, you know, get rid of them. I remember, unfortunately, this is an old story, but it's a little bit of an embarrassing story. I had these pair of leather boots. You know, I must have been about 24, 25. They were really neat boots. You know? Beautiful leather and everything. And then, I don't even remember now why, but for some reason I stopped wearing those boots. I said I probably went on to other boots or other shoes. But those were really good boots. They were really beautiful boots. They were expensive boots also. I kept those boots totally unworn, not touched at all, for many years. Many years. And I even stored them. And because I really liked them. But they were never used, ever, not once. And finally I got rid of them, and that was kind of a turning point. That was the beginning of my feng shui years, in my younger feng shui years. Not that those are over. They're still feng shui years. But this aparigraha is an attitude of non-collecting and of wanting to give and not keep. It's not even wanting to give you a present. I don't mean like that. It's a not wanting and not wanting to be a not wanting to hoard. And so that person is not holding on to the present, to things in the present. They're not hoping for things to come in the future. And they're not worried about the things that have happened in the past, right? And so that's a certain attitude. It's an acceptance of what's happened in the past. This is a really, these two, the future and the past, to be able to say, this was my past, and to appreciate it and respect it for what it was. This is my past. And to let it be. To not resent it, to not worry about it, to not be embittered by it, but to accept it. And when you think about it like this, I think this is interesting. This past of this lifetime is one infinitesimal moment of the infinite past that you've had. This is one infinitesimal moment of the beginningless past of all of the births that you've had. And so it's just this past is what you have the immediate memory of, right? And so to be able to kind of objectively honor and hold this past as a part of an infinite past, you know, and to just let it be. If this is what this part of my infinite number of lives has been, and to let it be. And then to be present to the future, not clinging, the aparigraha is not clinging to what is, because what is, and what you have is here. To let it be, and then to let the future be. To not cling to the future, to not have all kinds of expectations about the future. You can have expectations about the future, but not in terms of, I need this to happen in order to be happy. Because if you feel that way, then your mind is going to be always twirling around your future and worried and resenting or hurt or worried about the past in one way or the other, worried about the future in one way or the other, and clinging to the things you have in the present. So it's pain all the way around. And so the sannyasi, because we're now talking about one now who through karma yoga is gaining a certain shanti, you know, and is now going to do jhanam, right? Do jhanam. But a mind that is able to do jhanam has to be able to, at least temporarily, if not permanently, temporarily, be able to bless the past, let the future be as it is, and not cling to the present. And at least during that time of meditation, to give the mind that space. And then that attitude actually becomes natural for you as a sannyasi, because in fact, all of these things in the world are just in constant flux, and there's no ananda. Your ananda is in no way zero. It's absolute zero, in no way dependent upon anything in the universe. Your ananda is not dependent on the universe. The universe can't give it to you, it can't take it away. You know, what gives it to you and takes it away is your attitude toward the universe, because the Atma is the source of the ananda, and your mind is never away from the self. And so for the one who knows that, let all of the past belong to Ishvara, let the future belong to Ishvara, the present is Ishvara, right? And so let Ishvara take care of all of that, and let your mind either be in a relationship of prayer to Ishvara, right, that prayerful meditation to Ishvara, or just in the Nirvikalpa, Nididhyasana, sitting with myself, with that attitude. So, okay, sometimes this 10 and 11 are done together, but we'll do 11 next time. Okay? Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om. Thank you. You know, I've had the heat up today a lot, and the weather gets so cold.
Oh, no, it's not up for me. That was kind of cool.
Sorry. Where Kevin's over there.
You get too cold, you start to go to sleep.
Frozen brain.
If, yeah, as you had said, let go, you bless the past, because it is Ishwara Shakti and Ishwara's will and even future. In the present, then what can I do in the present? Because I still have Vyavahara to worry about. And so in that sense, the past and the future matters, doesn't it?
Well, the key word you just used there is worry. There's no reason to worry about it. There's engagement with it. Right? In other words, here's my present,
okay.
And I have duties, and so I perform those duties to the best of my ability. That's actually Ishvara Arpana Buddhi. That's what we say. That's worship of Ishvara, is to do my dharma, as in every situation. There's something there to be done. You know, there's your duty in that situation. Whatever that duty is, whatever is called upon you to do, and that's your responsibility that you do that. And that's it. So it's not denying that. It's not denying your life in any way. It's the attitude with which you approach your life. So if you approach it with that karma yoga buddhi, then that's engagement. And jnani is completely engaged in whatever life the prarabdha brings. You're engaged in it. But how are you engaged in it? You know? Like even in your past, when you remember the past, there can be like a freedom, a worry about the past, a shame about the past, a guilt about the past, you know, resentment about the past. You can have all types of ways of relating to the entirety of your life, in fact, or you know. Or you can accept it, that this was my life, this is what it is. And, you know, hold it with, as Ishvara, and without condemnation. And that gives you a freedom. It's not denying the past. And the same with the future. To hold it with the instead of an expectation of I need it to be this way or that way, you know, so that I can be happy, rather hold it with that sense of wonder to see how it's going to go. How is this prarabdha going to unfold, and let me be present to it? Instead of saying, the prarabdha must unfold this way in order for me to be whole and complete, which is what our problem is, right? We're always worried about what's going to happen to me.
You know, Will I be secure?
Will I be secure? Will I be safe? Will I, even more than, yeah, secure, but it's more, will I be happy? You know, will I be okay in terms of my well-being? Will I be able to say all is well with me? Or am I going to be, you know, emotionally dashed against the rocks? So we can have those worries about the future, if things are going to go well for me or not. Or you can look at the future as Ishvara. Look at the past as Ishvara, the present as Ishvara, and the future as Ishvara. And then be interested. You know? And the more, as your mind settles down more and more, it enjoys more shanti. As it enjoys more shanti, you know, then you are no longer, to the degree that you already have shanti, to that degree you're not really asking the world to give it to you because you already have it. You know, so when you're kind of maturing in this knowledge, it starts out where you really do need that karma yoga buddhi, because your mind has only known asking the creation to make me happy. That's all it's known. It's not a jnani. Just gets coming to knowledge, right? So then that karma yoga buddhi allows you to go ahead and have your desires and to go after those desires, but take the results of your actions as prasad. from Ishwara, is prasad from Bhagavan. And that takes the sting out of that desire. It makes it more into a burnt seed type of a desire, which allows the mind to enjoy much more shanti, which allows the mind to own this knowledge, to be present to this knowledge, which allows the shanti to increase, which allows the mind to become less and less needy of the creation to make it full, because the more that the mind enjoys shanti, the less it needs the creation. Just think about it. Whenever you're, you know, feeling full, you're not asking the creation to be full. But of course, then you start worrying about when the fullness is going to go away. It's a problem. You know, but for a jnani that, or for a mumukshu, that's not so much the problem, because you know what the source of fullness is. You know, and so the more shanti you enjoy, the more you can depend on yourself and on Ishwara. So it builds on itself. Johnny?
I was going to say that I was just noticing in this description of meditation, he's not talking about japa or any particular technique.
Not yet. He's going to talk quite a bit about meditation, though. So it's only one verse. Yeah, we're just starting. Yeah. Several verses on this now. But
that's interesting. He's starting with, like, a clean, quiet place.
He's starting with the beginning. He's going to talk about the asana. He talks about the place and having prepared the mind with karma yoga, that type of thing. We've already talked quite a bit about that. Talked about the place, the asana, and then how to do the meditation, go on. Yeah.
Well,
and what it's for, he'll even say in the next verse, the nididhyasana, the dhyanam, it's for antakarana shuddhi. You know? So he talks about that. What is antakarana shuddhi? You know, Swamiji in his bhasha talks a lot about it too. That'll be very interesting for you to read. The verse
when
is coming
when
up.
You say nididhyasana, do you mean the
contemplation?
But do you because sometimes specifically nididhyasana means you know, sort of like bringing the self into the forefront, or do you mean something else by that? Just
jhana that can be just on the atma or on saguna brahman also. I mean, for both. Yeah. Nityadhyasana can also include Ishwara. Because you can say Ishwaroham, I am Ishwara, which is beautiful meditation. But when you say I am Ishwara, then you're seeing the Advaita. It's like saying another in Nityadhyasana, because that's the whole vision. You can say, I am the whole. Right? And then what happens is that the subject and the object are resolved into the one. I like Ishwaroham, I am Ishwara. Because then the jiva resolves into Ishwara.
It's a good reminder.
And another way of saying it is then, if you say, I am Ishwara, then the jiva resolves into you, who are Ishwara. Right? Did you see that? Because if I say, I, means it's not the jiva is Ishwara. The jiva is part of Ishwara. I'm the jiva upadhi. Is part of the Ishwara Upadhi. But if I say I, means I, the Atma, am Ishwara.
Mm.
And so then now when you say, if you say I am Ishwara, the word I goes to the Atma, which is Brahman, right? Which is Ishwara, right? Because if you say I am Ishwara, then the I that you're talking about is Brahman, the Atma, which is Brahman. Because the Atma, that's the Atma that is the self of Ishwara. So then when you say, I am Ishwara, then also the jiva has to be recognized, the jiva upadhi, this jiva, has to be recognized as part of yourself. Do you see what I mean? I am the self of Ishwara. Right? This jiva, if that's who I am, so I am Ishwara, then this jiva is part of Ishwara. But I am Ishwara. So this jiva is part of me. Ishwara is me, right? And so there's no, Ishvara is not something foreign. So it's not something, like something out there. Ishvara is the Maya Upadi, it's the manifestation of the infinite knowledge, it's the manifestation of me, of my being. It comes from my being, from the Atma. Right? So there's nothing separate to be afraid of. It is you, you know.
You know, I've been noticing, just as you're talking here, that it seems to me that sometimes in the sort of dramatic moments of my life that maybe, well, not drama, that when big things happen, like life and death and big changes and to do with other people and so forth, I seem to have more of a connection of fullness and letting go just because it's so big. That there's really nothing you can do but embrace the situation. And my mind, in those times, I mean, I realize it's happened, you know, six or seven times, that I really, it really does become easy to embrace those changes, and I'm not fearful or anxious or anything, you're just accepting. And then 2 months later, some little chicken shit thing. You know, and I'll be all anxious and get myself all in a frenzy over nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
What kind of thing?
You know.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. Because I've had that experience, too. There's, it's almost like a...
I mean, I'm mostly anxious about small things.
Little things.
Yeah.
But when these major things happen, it's so huge that it creates a surrender.
Yeah, it punches it up a level.
For sure. I've had that experience with the bigger events, even with my parents. When I lost my brother, there's different things, you know.
Yeah.
They're so big that Ishvara takes over. It's like Ishvara swallows the whatever jiva is there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, to say I am Ishvara, unless the mind resolves into the self, it's making the statement forces you to resolve.
You say I am Ishvara, if you've been exposed to teaching, mm-hmm. and you contemplate him, I am Ishvara, then it's a very powerful meditation because so many things have to fall into place if you say that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, that's why when Swamiji taught us some contemplations, he didn't start right at the beginning of the course. They came later in the course.
Yeah, he did start with some very simple contemplations, like that are very powerful, like very simple. Like, for instance, I remember him doing one where you're listening to the sounds outside. And then recognizing that you are the silence, you know, that you are the silence in which the sounds are taking place.
Yeah.
So making a differentiation that sounds take place in silence. That was a beautiful meditation, but he did different things that are immediately recognizable to you. And then moved in from there. Mm. He wouldn't say, I am Brahman.
No, that was the last meditation.
You know, I think that I've always loved that recognizing the silence behind the sound, or the silence in the sound, because awareness, the one who's aware of sound is not making sound. Even in the doing of japa, the repetition of a mantra, the mantra is taking place in silence. The silence is the atma, and so to be able to recognize that viveka between the silence of awareness and the sound is a beautiful, you know, easily accessible to you.
Mm-hmm. But profound.
Yeah, very. Even the silence or the shanti in the agitation. Mm-hmm. You know?
That's harder.
It's the same. It's the same thing. It's the silence, the shanti, that is always there no matter what the mind is doing. So to be able to, you know, recognize that. And then you recognize that as your very being. And so those meditations are really nice.
Like if you were in that storm that's been happening the last few days, and I was in a situation where I was really close to it, I could hear it, and it was like just inside my mind as well as outside. So you'd be able to see the silence or feel the silence even in all that agitation.
Yeah.
Didn't do it, but at that moment.
At that moment, yeah. Yeah. So nice to have Tibby.
Where is she?
Oh, she's probably in bed. You know, she goes at a different speed. You know? She takes her time. Like if we're playing a little game or something, everything's a mouse or something to her, you know? And she really gets prepared to catch the mouse. But she will wait
for the right moment
with such stillness and concentration, and she will take her time. In fact, as I'm playing with her, I've started really slowing down as I move the little mouse or whatever it is around, whatever game I'm playing with it. Now I'll move it really kind of slowly and go over here and go over there and just watch her, you know, slowly take her time. Watch every movement and decide when she's going to pounce. But there's such stillness in it. There's such stillness in it. It's really suddenly I'm learning so much from her. She's so beautiful. It's amazing. Nothing cluttered, nothing in the way. But that kind of there's a meditative stillness. Being, just being. And she's so beautiful. It's nice to have a little one animal in the house. So beautiful. I have a little halter for her. Did you put the halter on and take her for a walk? Where did she go?
Just down the steps. And then she saw something, she got scared. And then
yeah. So far, I put the little halter. It's red. Now, it took me several days before she'd even get close to the halter. She'd run. She did not want it. And I didn't force it on her at all. Then finally, she decided to try it. And she came and she let me put it on her. She was very good about it. And then from that day on, we would go out and we'd go down the steps. Sometimes she'll go look around in the garage. I won't let her go in the garage because it's too dirty in there. But she really just likes to be in the steps. So she'll go down the steps and then we'll come back up after a while, you know. She has her own pace. I just go at her pace completely, which I really enjoy. It's very meditative because she will spend a long time on any given step. But now what's so sweet is that now she really loves to go for the little walk. And so she'll sit, look at me, and she'll sit by the door and then look and say, it's like saying, do you think we could go now? And I'll usually, if I possibly can, I do it two or three times a day with her. But now I'll sit here and I'll take out the little red collar. And she'll just trot over and sit there. And I'll put this halter on. And as I'm putting it on, then she'll lay down, you know, on kind of on her back, on her side, and let me get this thing all attached. And then out we go.
It's like putting the saddle on the horse, kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah, she's perfectly, she knows. So there, we're going to do it now. She comes right up and... Very sweet. I think animals and little children are so innocent, you know, so pure. It's a nice, nice experience.
Sometimes it takes a long time to appreciate your past. You can be really irritated with your, and upset over your past. And that'll stay with you for a long time. And then years later, you can figure out how that pattern worked out well for you, even though you were upset about that pattern while it was happening, while you thought about it.
Yeah, that's right. You should read, if you're all reading, I hope you're all reading the Swamiji's commentary on all of this. This is what's really good. You have to study it. If you have time, you know, read it carefully. This Bhagavad Gita, his commentary is amazing. How much depth he goes into. It's really, really so nice to have it. But what you're talking about, Edward, he talks as a nice thing in there. We done?
Bhagavad Gita.